This is Warriors,
and this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, or the best day Nintendo podcast on the internet. It's the mini show for the month of December 2022. So we'll talk about whatever we feel like. The main event will be our tier rankings. We'll get back into doing that. We got four more series to add into the rankings, so that'll be good. Otherwise, like, as far as games, I've been playing a lot of Pokemon.
Same here.
Yeah, I haven't really played much Pokemon, but
we've talked about Pokemon 2 weeks in a row now, so I don't know how deep we want to get into it this time, but I finished off the Pokedex the other day with some help from one of the guys from the Discord group. I just need the Violet version exclusive Maridon, or is it Caridon?
Maridon
is the Violet. Yes,
yeah, that's right.
I need that Electric Dragon to finish off the living decks, but otherwise...
Well, I'll just give you mine. I didn't know that.
When you're ready to start off a new one?
I can just give you mine. I'm not doing anything.
Okay, cool.
I can just use my ride one. Like, it's weird that they give you an extra one.
Yeah. They probably maybe do that for trade purposes.
I haven't messed around with it, but yeah, you can move it from like being a ride to being a Pokemon in your hand and on your team.
Right. The only downside is if you pull it out as a ride, it immediately comes off your team, and so you have to put it back in your team to use it.
Yeah.
So that's the annoying thing about it.
I mean, I guess spoilers, at a certain point in the game, you're able to use this Pokemon. I don't think that should surprise anybody.
Yeah.
But For me, like, I want to have like the living decks, because when it comes time to transfer to home, they might do something shitty like, oh, you can't transfer your ride Pokemon to home. So
I thought it would have been cool if you couldn't use your ride Pokemon for battle, but then they gave you the other version's main one as that one that you can catch and fight in the story. I thought that would have been cool.
Didn't they kind of do that in... Oh, was that like Black and White? Or maybe Black 2, White 2, where you end up like getting the opposite versions?
Of whatever was on the cover, yeah. I think it was Black and White.
Maybe.
It was like the opposite of what was on the cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems about right. Because I remember I got White version, because I assumed that'd be the less popular one, and I ended up with the Electro Dragon, which I think is the Zekrom.
Yeah, which was the more popular one, because I ended up with the Fire Dragon, which was the white one.
Yep, the Reshiram.
Yeah.
Those are the days.
Yeah.
Can't wait for the Gen 5 remake, guys. It's going to be so good.
It legitimately is going to be good. That was a very good
game. Probably see in about 10 months at the rate they're going.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I'm sad there isn't the Hisui versions in this. I was really hoping for that.
Well, they got to do... like, they're probably going to do some sort of DLC expanded content at some point for this game, don't you think?
Yeah, and they better put some of those in there.
So yeah, they'll probably almost certainly bring in more Pokemon, more Pokedex entries.
I want to use Cleaver.
Yeah, well, they've already said they've data mined 160, I think, species of Pokemon that aren't in it that will be at some point. And also, I mean, assuming this is supposed to be Spain, it's pretty obvious in the Northeast there's this blocked off section.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of right where France would be. So it makes sense that they might have some kind of expansion that takes you into, got amazing if it's in the entirety of Kalos, but maybe a part of Kalos is up there.
That'd be intense. Like, that'd be a really cool expansion of like, okay, and here's the Kalos region. Mm-hmm. Kind of akin to what they did in the original Gold Silver. It's like, you finish the game, it's like, oh, and by the way, Kanto is in the game.
Yeah. Again, pure speculation. I have no idea what they would do, but it kind of checks out. It makes sense that that is the thing that they could do, and I have such a soft spot for Kalos and for the 6th generation.
Which one was Kalos? Oh, that was 6th gen?
Yep.
X and Y, yeah. I love that one so much, so I would be thrilled to see that one circulate through here.
That'd be really, really cool. Mm-hmm.
I did like the, as a whole, the Dex, I think it had... No, it didn't have the smallest of new Pokemon, but it was... one of the bottom ones when it came to, like, new Pokemon.
I'd have to look through it again.
It wasn't much.
But, yeah, I mean, I think that there's... There are some high points, but there's just not a lot of it. I mean, just off the top of my head, this is the one that gave us the Sword and Shield one?
Aegislash.
Or Aegislash. Yeah. Part of it. People like that one.
Pyroar. Heliolisk. Klefki.
Yeah, Klefki was in that one, too.
Talonflame.
Yeah. So, it's got its Pokemans in it that are okay, but, like, yeah.
But the game itself was fun. It had good gyms, it had a good story, it had a good flow.
I really liked how they broke the Pokedex up into three sections. Okay, well, here's all the ones that are going to be in this area, and then here's all your different areas.
Yeah, sure.
They gave you three different checklists you can check off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's whatever.
Like, yeah. Yeah, I mean, at this point, I've been doing a lot of raids. I think it's a fairly efficient way of getting things leveled up and, you know, farming for cash so you can buy all your vitamins and your bottle caps and make different Pokemon that you can take on raids. So I'm looking forward to the point where they're going to do expanded content, but I think I'm getting pretty near to, like, I've filled up the checklist. I'm getting pretty near to the end of, you know, at this point, like, okay, well, it's time to play something else and wait for the next batch of Pokemon to make a living dex with.
I'm ready to just do another run, just fresh, brand new run. I really want to use Godego right from the beginning because I got a level 16 one just sitting in my box waiting for it. I want to use that Glamora thing, that rock poison.
Yeah, that one looks really good too. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And maybe when we do another Pokemon show, we'll pick a handful of other new Pokemon and break them down.
Yeah, I think we should do that.
That was fun doing it the last time with the four.
So. It's just a, yeah.
But yeah, I think we're all in different spots with this too, because now it's like, okay, the game, the post game really just started. I just traded for my, you know, my 400th entry to complete the Pokedex. Thank you, Wes.
Yeah, bro.
So, yeah, now I've got the Shiny Charm, and I've already been doing Shiny Hunting, so now I get to just, you know, have even more, well, essentially faster Shiny Hunting now with that Charm, because that really does increase the likelihood of finding them, and the various methods that you can do it throughout the game. So, I've already found a bunch. Found, like, maybe half a dozen.
You gonna try a living dex of shiny?
No, I don't think I'm gonna do that. I think there's some in the game where it's like, no, I don't want to sit there and hatch eggs to get the starter. Three versions of the shiny starters is, no, that's just, you know, beating your head against the wall. I'm not for that. Like, I don't want to sit there and roll encounters, full odds encounters with the legendaries, or try to find roll that screen in and out over and over again to see if I can get Spiritomb or whatever. All of that is boring gameplay to me, but what's fun for me is being like, here's 8 to 10 shinies that I really, really want to have, ones I want to build and spec and play with, and then take them into raids and just show them off. I feel like such a badass because I keep bringing in the shiny Azumarill into raids, and nobody else, not a lot of other people even have shinies, so I feel like I'm special and they're not.
Oh, they're definitely not.
It's great.
No, right. You are special.
I derive my value through this. This is absolutely wonderful for me, personally.
I keep fantasizing about making a competitive team and doing Wi-Fi battles and stuff. And I was like, no, I'm just going to get angry at Pokemon.
Like, I mean, you probably do pretty good. Like, yeah. You'd be sort of like, there's a lot of people. The game sold 10 million copies in 3 days. There's a lot of people playing Pokemon. Like, the amount of people, like, the ratio right now of people who just kind of, like, trying it out for the first time or just kind of, like, playing for fun as opposed to people, like, building out, like, spec'd out competitive teams. Like, you're probably going to run into a lot of people who are just, these ones are my favorites. Please don't kill all my friends. And then you're saying, I'm about to.
Yeah, and you're coming in with, like, wonky strategies like you were talking about earlier.
Just yeah.
Mess them up. Everybody running Palafin. Multiple Palafin.
Oh, God. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, I would like to mess with it. See how it is.
Good. But I think the post-game content's really impressive in this one.
Yeah, it is.
Because, you know, you can re-roll all the gyms and all of the Starfall leaders. You can re-battle them. You can battle them over and over again, which is pretty great. And you have, like,
the gyms? Can you refight the gyms over and over?
As far as I know, no. You just do the gyms once.
Oh.
But
then you do the tournaments at the school, and the tournaments, I believe they for sure contain at least some of those gym leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. you'll be able to cycle through them at some
point. Oh, you can just keep doing the tournaments.
Yep.
Yeah, over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And the Team Star leaders, they don't do like the what's the name of the car Pokemon? Now I can't remember.
Revarum.
They don't do like the big Revarum fight at the end. They just got like 5 or 6.
I want to use that thing again. Not again. I want to use that thing. I haven't used that one either.
I think this would be a really cool version to do just like monotype teams.
Yeah this would be pretty good. Why do you get the Mousehold and what are the other good monotypes in this one?
No, I mean just like I'm gonna run through the game with just fire types.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
I think there should be a battle with Clive. You know, he's got the slick back hairdo. Mm. And just do his Rockabilly team, where he's got Squawkabilly, Ravoom, and then 4 different versions of Rotom. And
yeah.
All the different forms that look like they're products from the 1950s.
Yeah, that'd be good. Funny. Yeah. I do like that they just give you the one thing. Like, if you want to mess around with, like, your different Rotom forms, they just give you the one thing you can swap it around. Another way, this game just, gives you, like, the short, easy version to do the thing you want to do, rather than go through the whole rigmarole.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You guys playing any other games right now?
Pokemon Go. I honestly know that this game has totally taken over. I played GTA 3 briefly, but I've already talked about that a bunch of times, so I don't really have any gaming content. And Diablo Resurrected, I've talked about that a million times. I play like three games over and over again.
It's the big one right now. Yeah.
How excited are you right now, Ryan, for that Hades 2?
Oh, I'm so excited.
Did you watch that trailer?
I actually haven't watched the trailer, no.
Yeah, there's a trailer for it, yeah.
Okay.
Like, it was like a announcement trailer or whatever. I think maybe it was at Game Awards, I don't know. I just randomly saw it in my YouTube feed. I was like, holy shit, and just immediately watched it.
Yeah, I don't know if it was at, I didn't watch the Game Awards, I don't give a shit. Who cares? But I think it was at the Game Awards. But yeah, well, I don't know if they've confirmed platforms. I think, like, Hades originally, like, the first console launch was on Switch, and then it launched on other platforms a little while later.
I think that was the case. I could be wrong.
It was definitely an early access on PC before it launched on Switch.
Mm-hmm. But did you see in the trailer?
It's a new person. It's not Zagreus. Oh, okay. And it's looks like some kind of witch thing is, like, trying to help her do something, and I think she's supposed to be a daughter of Zeus.
Yeah, there's like a 2-minute trailer. And the first minute, the first 50 seconds is animated cutscene. And then it finally shows gameplay. When you get to the gameplay, like, oh yeah, that's Hades. That's a super giant game right there.
Yeah.
Very good.
It just looks like Hades. It looks good. They're showing for some of the...
I feel like that's good, because Zagreus' story is so... because I played through it 100 times. His story feels so complete. By the time that you've really invested the time and energy into the game... And you've exhausted all the storylines, and you see how everything unfolds. I don't know what you could do with that character again to do 100 run-throughs with the same guy. It's nice that they would give you a new character to play.
Yeah, some girl. And then, like, some of the god powers you got. Like, they showed Apollo and Nemesis.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. I saw those, too.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
There were a couple other game announcements that we'll get to at the end of the month when we do the official show. There are also a couple more games... coming out just in the next couple of weeks that we'll be able to, you know, freshen up the game content, because we got River City Girls 2.
Yeah, I know. Two sequels coming my way soon. Yeah. This is nice.
In just a few days, River City Girls 2 is coming out on the 15th.
Yeah.
We finally got...
I love that game. So
really, really good. Really looking forward to the second one. And they actually I think it's going to be over by the time this show posts, but they made the first River City Girls free. On the nice. Nintendo Switch, if you have the online subscription, they'll let you, like, try it out. Like, there was a trial period of, like, 6 days that you could just try. You can burn through that game in 6 days. But, yeah, and then Sports Story is at some point this month. We haven't gotten a solid date yet, but
I forgot about Sports Story.
Yep. There's two pretty high-profile games in the indie scene.
We're a third of the way through the month, and I would hope that they'd get this thing out before Christmas.
Well, it was weird because, like, River City Girls 2, just by way of example, it launched in Japan at the beginning of the month, I think the first or the second, and they're like, yeah, we're going to try to get it out in other regions by the end of the month, but we're not sure what's happening yet. And then up until about, like, the 8th or the 9th, they were still like, yeah, we're not sure yet. And I was just randomly browsing the coming soon section of the Nintendo eShop, and I saw, like, the 15th. And I was like, well, Nintendo thinks it's coming out the 15th. Hmm. And then just, like, a day or two later, like, yep, 15th confirmed. So, the eShop was saying one thing, but they still weren't sure, which is a little weird, but... So I've been keeping an eye out on the eShop for Sports Story, but it's still just showing as a 2022 game. Don't have a solid date for it yet. But you'd hope that before Christmas, a game would come out, but we'll see.
I'm going to be starting Persona 5 this week at some point.
Nice. Very cool.
I need something else to start getting into.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing a lot of Teamfight Tactics. They came out with a new season.
I don't know what that is, but cool.
It's a League of Legends auto chess game. I've been playing a lot with your brother Jeremy.
That's good.
It's fun. It's a good little strategy game. You may like it, Ryan.
Yeah,
it's a lot of, like, different strategies and builds and stuff.
Auto chess. I mean, you're just sort of equipping a board and then it plays itself out.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
You do different rounds and, you know, positioning and you collect multiples of the same thing to raise its rank, and then you build different items to... Yeah, it's interesting. I like that game. It's free. So.
I've been playing some Switch Sports. They updated with golf.
That was golf.
It's good. It's good. Thumbs up. I am still not used to the sensitivity of the Joy-Con controls as opposed to like the Wii Remote controls. I never played Wii Sports Resort with the Wii Motion Plus, so I don't know if it's more akin to that. But the original Wii Sports, like, you just took the controller and hit someone in the face with it, or just like wave it around, and you're probably gonna do okay.
Yeah, I know you. I know John.
But like a putting, especially,
it's like a dent to my skull.
You're welcome. Like the putting especially. You don't have boxing yet. At some point they will, and you're going to come over and we'll play boxing. The putting especially in Switch Sports Golf is very sensitive. Like you are doing very slight movements and even like moving at what you would think of just like as like average speed, or if you're like just playing like mini golf or something, you are hitting the ball quite a bit. So I don't know if there's a way to adjust the sensitivity or if it's just something that I got to get used to. But I played two rounds of 9-hole. I think there's a total of 21 different courses, if I'm not mistaken. So there's a good amount of stuff. You just like play randomized courses, you'll probably see a variety on multiple playthroughs. But yeah, it's golf. It's not quite as, I guess, like customizable. They're not as like forthcoming with information as you would see in like a Golf Story or a Mario Golf Super Rush, where you can kind of adjust more things and it will give you like your trajectory and just kind of present you with more information. This, you're just kind of like, okay, hit the ball. And if you like twist your wrist one way or another, you're like kind of doing your draw and your fade. But usually if you're doing that, you're losing a lot of control. So, and also if you're doing like a nice shot, in quotes, you're probably hitting it farther than you're going to be projected to hit it, which has gotten me in trouble a couple of times because I'll just like hit it down the fairway, do a really like powerful nice shot, and it will bounce straight off the fairway into the rough or into a bunker. So getting used to the courses is going to take some work. And I don't know like how much more of Switch Sports Golf I'll be playing. I'll probably tinker with it a bit from time to time. Mika really likes the tennis. We played a bunch of rounds of tennis. And she has to wear the wrist strap. She doesn't have a choice because she's moving around the entire living room, swinging wildly. She ran into the couch and banged her knee today because she was moving around so much playing this tennis game. Meanwhile, I'm just like sitting on the couch, slightly flicking my wrist. Like, yep, yeah, we're winning. We're doing it. Yeah, she got really into it. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've been doing is Pokemon and a little bit of Switch Sports. Did you guys see the new Mario movie trailer?
They only have the one new one, right?
Well, I think they showed
another one.
I think they showed more at the Game Awards. I wouldn't know. I didn't watch them. Game Awards are stupid. But they did like the debut one, and then they did one like at I think toward the end of November, maybe the beginning of this month, where they showed another like 2.5 minute trailer, and we saw Luigi, and we saw like Charlie Day doing the voice acting for Luigi, and we saw Peach, and we heard some of the voice acting there. We heard some more of the voice acting for the Toads. But yeah, this movie looks really, really nice. Just eye candy everywhere.
I'm on board for it. I don't know what everybody seems so against
Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt doing his Chris Pratt voice. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's fine. Who cares? It's going to be great. I'm on board.
I think it'll probably be like a B-. Like, it'll be fine. He'll do all right. I don't think anyone's going to like walk away from me like, oh my God, Chris Pratt was amazing. But I think that this is going to be a really enjoyable movie.
Yeah, I had a coworker. I was like, I'm sick of regular actors taking jobs away from voice actors. I'm like, calm down. It's going to be fine. Like, it's...
Is he implying that voice actors aren't real actors? That's not cool.
Well, that like... Well, I did say real actors, but like live action, live actors opposed to voice actors.
I think we talked about this already, but did like we? if Charles Martinet was doing his Mario Charles Martinet voice for an hour and a half, people would be so fucking annoyed in that movie. I think people underestimate just how irritating it would be hearing the squeaky Mario screeching for an hour and a half of a
what about the Luigi feature voice?
I think that might be a little bit better.
Mario!
Maybe we'll get a Luigi's Mansion movie someday. I think it'd be fun.
I'm on board for that movie. That'd be great.
Yeah.
A Nintendo horror movie.
But I think like Charlie Day does bring like that sort of like nervous energy to Luigi. Kind of a panicky kind of guy.
It's funny because, you know, actor John Leguizamo portrayed Luigi in in the original live action one. And he had an interesting comment where he was talking about the whitewashing of film.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes you're seeing what should be minority casting just going to white people for the hell of it. Like, I don't believe Chris Pratt's Italian. I don't know. And I don't think that he was saying specifically because of this, because he played Luigi or whatever. But he is Puerto Rican. I believe he's Puerto Rican. And he portrayed an Italian man. So I wonder if he's being hypocritical, or is his point truly just that there should be more minorities, regardless of whether or not they are portraying the minority that they are.
You know, I would probably agree with like the
Was a convoluted logic
in my head. Wow, I gotta get a spreadsheet out.
If he's making the point that like what you're saying, if he is making that point, like there should be more minority representation, whether it's through like live action films or voice acting. Like, yeah, I'm 100% on board. Definitely, there should be more minority representation in films and other media. I forget where I was going with this, but yes. Yes, and the movie also looks very good.
I was just wondering if because he didn't really nail down exactly what his point was. Mm. I think there is this boundary of hypocrisy that he is dabbling with a little bit as someone that didn't accurately portray the nationality of someone in film. And again, Bob Hoskins, he's English, isn't he?
I'm pretty sure that sounds about right.
Yeah,
he's not Italian either.
Italian either, right? Like,
well, okay, so we're not going to get we're not going to get too deep into this because that's not the sort of podcast this is. But there is a sort of a conversation to be had there about like how minority groups are treated throughout history and when a minority group stops being a minority group and achieves, you know, whiteness. In quotes, because there was a time where Irish people were very discriminated against, and then they just became part of general white people. And Italians, to your point, like there was a time where Italians were treated as other, and then they just sort of like became white people. So there's a sort of like, and of course, easier for Caucasian people to sort of move into the social status of whiteness, but the sort of social status of whiteness does exist, and it's not great. It's not great that this sort of thing just kind of happens. Everyone should be treated like we are. It's fucking great. it's fucking great that everyone's just nice to me wherever I go. Everyone should be treated like this. But there's a sort of a social structure. And I think like getting back to the original point, like having more representation, I think helps build toward that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I didn't read John Leguizamo's comments. I didn't give a shit that he was Puerto Rican portraying an Italian person.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Okay, in point of clarification, this is so messy. He is not Puerto Rican. He has, however, claimed he's Puerto Rican. He did a DNA test and confirmed he was Colombian.
Okay.
Mostly Colombian. He was born in Colombia. But I guess he was told at some point in his life that his ancestry is a combination of Puerto Rican, Italian, and Lebanese.
Was he born in Colombia and immigrated? We're learning all about John Leguizamo at this point.
That's what this podcast is.
Well,
now.
The thing we should, again, let's be clear. John Leguizamo is a great actor.
Oh, he's the
fucking
best.
Slaves
yeah.
in anything he does. He's a wonderful actor.
It's like an Ice Age. Everything.
He was in Ice Age especially.
He's the Sloth.
Oh, he's the Sloth?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God.
He's like a legitimate, like really amazing voice actor. He's great.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting. I just thought it was really a funny comment for him to make, and one that potentially was you know, lacking self-awareness, or, again, had an even deeper message to deliver that, you know, is valid. Mm. It's absolutely valid.
Yeah. So you want to do some tier rankings?
Let's do it.
Cool.
Nice segue.
Yeah.
Well, we don't need to segue here.
I saw him in a movie recently.
John Leguizamo?
Yeah.
Which one?
He's the main villain in Violent Night.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's fun.
He is great in it, too. He really is wonderful.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Good movie? Thumbs up?
A hesitant maybe thumbs up.
Okay.
You know? It's okay. If you want a Christmas movie and you don't have a new Christmas movie to watch.
You don't want to watch Batman Returns?
Oh, and you're okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fun one. But if you don't want something that's too... I mean, if you're okay with, like, reveling in a little bit of the ultra-violence.
Mm.
It's a very, very violent film. I mean, it's called Violent Night. It's gory. It's gory in the vein of, like, those recent... What was that thing with Harley Quinn and...
Birds of Prey?
Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad. Mm. If you're okay with that level of violence from, like, a Suicide Squad, you'll be cool with this.
Okay.
And, yeah, I don't know. It's trying to be simultaneously, like, Die Hard plus heartfelt Christmas thing with over-the-top violence. And, I don't know. It's okay. It's enjoyable enough.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's, So, we're gonna do some tier rankings for Luigi's Mansion, Metroid, Legendary Starfy, and... Earthbound/Mother, the Mother series.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go through all four of those, give them our tier rankings. So just as a reminder, our tier rankings, we have S, top tier, as well, and goes all the way down to F. And F, I don't know, like, your perspective on this, or yours, Wes. What I usually consider is, like, an F tier ranking is, like, this franchise did miserably. It is dead. It's never coming back and has really no long-lasting...
Don't we already have something in the F?
We do. We have two things in the F ranking. So going... We'll go in reverse, or we'll go from the F rankings all the way up to the S. Right now, our F-ranked game series are Pushmo and Chibi-Robo. These are two series that are done...
Hand-selected by me at random.
They're not coming back. They don't really have a long-lasting legacy.
Yeah.
They were, like, and Chibi-Robo especially. Like, I don't think we really had solid sales numbers for Pushmo, but Chibi-Robo almost always sold just absolutely miserably. No one cared about this.
Right.
There's going to be no franchise care for that going forward, and most likely the same for Pushmo. That was kind of a 3DS download series exclusively. There was, like, a Wii U entry as well. We have nothing in the D tier as of yet. In the C tier, we got Brain Age, Pikmin, and the Advance Wars/Battalion Wars series.
Mm-hmm.
In the B tier, we got Paper Mario, Fire Emblem, and Xenoblade. Rounding out the A tier, we got Kirby and Splatoon so far.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the S tier, we got Zelda, Mario, Mario Kart, Pokemon, Super Smash Bros., and Donkey Kong. Our most populated tier so far.
Oh, that feels right.
Yep. So, where do you want to start?
I don't know. You want to take one of yours or take one of mine?
Why don't we start with Luigi's Mansion?
All right, let's do it.
This is a game series we just recently talked about on the Retro Show. The first game was released in November 2001.
I'm going to take a guess right now where we're going to put it.
Okay, guess.
Low B.
Okay, let's get into it. So, it did take quite a while for this to actually become a franchise. The original game, like I just said, was in 2001. We didn't get a follow-up until Dark Moon on the 3DS, two hardware cycles later. There was also an arcade game, funnily enough, in 2015, which I have played, fellas. Me and Des were at a barcade a couple weeks ago. We played Luigi's Mansion for the arcade. It was fine. And there was a remake of the original game on the 3DS in 2018, and then a brand new game in the series in 2019, which is, of course, the Switch game Luigi's Mansion 3.
Which is selling a lot right now.
Mm.
Like, I'm selling them daily.
We're going to get to it. So just the basic concept of the series. It's a horror adventure game. You're kind of going through, like, almost Resident Evil style. It's kind of veered more away from this as the series has gone on, but you're in an area and you need to find the key to open the door to get to your next area. You'll bust some ghosts and they'll probably, like, pop out at you and give you a little jump scare sometimes, but kind of like in an adventure game, not in the way that you're managing a lot of inventory, but in the way you're kind of progressing through, like, a maze like area.
It's got a very diorama feel to it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, very much like, I mean, this is an obscure reference, but Legends of the Hidden Temple, that final thing where they had to go through the house, so they had to go through the thing. You know? Yeah, you're kind of like watching it with a wall removed.
Fantasized about being on Legends of the Hidden Temple. I would love to go through that temple.
He wanted to be a temple guard, though. He just wanted to kidnap the children.
He just wanted to grab those kids.
And just like, fuck you, kid. That's my half of the pendant. Stay away from me.
Oh, let's do a breakdown here. So
nobody can deal with a fucking silver monkey. Come on. The head's backwards.
The shrine of the silver monkey.
Shrine. All right. Sorry, John.
Iconography. It's Luigi maybe the second or third most recognizable Nintendo character. First, of course, being Mario. The second, maybe Donkey Kong. But after that, like, it's Luigi. Like, he's easily top three recognizable. Longevity, it has been around for a while, but the only...
thanks to John Leguizamo.
We now know who he is. Johnny Legs, man.
He brought that character to life.
Johnny Legs and Charlie Day, the two of them.
We owe his Luigi success to those two men.
And I suppose Charles Martinet, kinda. But Johnny Legs. It has been around for a while, like I mentioned, but only became a major franchise in 2013. So it hasn't been a franchise for that long. So I'd say like kind of a B in that category. Oh, did I mention like iconography? What do you guys think for iconography?
I think he is obviously the lesser of the two.
Sure.
I don't have him. I give him an A in iconography. Okay. Because everyone, I feel like, knows Luigi, but they know he's player two and nobody wants to be player two.
Okay. You know? I think that's totally fair.
He's a silver medal if there ever was
one. I prefer Luigi over Mario.
Yeah.
I think Mario's overrated. I'm like, I think yeah, that's a lot. Mario. Like, who cares? Everybody loves Mario. Yeah. Luigi needs some respect.
I think it says a lot about you. Yeah. Like, that you want to be Luigi.
Well, Luigi's also often portrayed as the coward. Mm-hmm. He's the one that's kind of the scaredy cat and is doesn't want to be the hero.
I mean, he does also have, like, perform differently mechanically than Mario. He jumps higher. Sometimes runs faster, but not always. But he doesn't have the traction. He'll kind of slide around like he's on ice.
Mm-hmm. True.
For sales, 21 plus million as a series across four entries. I'm not counting the arcade for this.
Get this. I thought this was fascinating. First game, right? Actually, pretty bad. I think you actually have to say this whole series starts on a really auspicious note that Luigi's Mansion is by far the worst launch game ever for a Nintendo console.
Huh.
It is terrible.
12 copies.
It sold 3 million copies. That's pathetic.
3 million copies on a system that sold 20 million.
I hate to say this, and two thoughts I want to get to. The first of which is that it might be partly to blame for why the GameCube was not the success that other consoles were, because they're trying to market Luigi's Mansion. Like, who gives a shit about Luigi? People want Mario. What if there was a different thing that they could have put forward and said, here's the new next-gen thing, and it's a Mario platformer, and look at these environments, look, it's amazing. And you got a Luigi puzzler.
They did that on Wii U. You know? Launched with the Mario game.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there we were. Wii U.
I compare it to, say, Super Mario Brothers, Mario World, Mario 64, Mario Odyssey. All of these were major successes. And the GameCube will get other Mario games. It's just not a launched game. So when your first introduction to this thing is a game that only sells 3 million, that sucks. But here's the thing. Is it the DS is the next one, or is it the GameCube?
Before we move on to that.
That one sells 6 million copies.
Almost 6.5. A word about Luigi's, but I'm going to stand up for Luigi's Mansion on GameCube. I don't think that much of the failure of the GameCube, I don't think you can rest entirely on Luigi's shoulders. I think that the lack of a Mario game is certainly a contributing factor, but that doesn't mean that the fact that Luigi had a game as the initial launch.
It's not like somebody's going to take a look at the GameCube. It's like, oh, should I get it? Oh, it has a Luigi game on it?
You'd be surprised.
I think the fact that Mario game wasn't available at launch is definitely a contributing factor to why the launch might not have been super successful. But we wouldn't like pin it on like, well, it didn't have a Mario game at launch, so the Star Wars game that launched with it is to blame. It doesn't have a Mario game at launch and did poorly, so like that Pikmin game that launched close to the launch of the GameCube is to blame.
Again, I don't want to say it's solely responsible. I'm just saying there's probably like a potential for 500,000, a million more units could have been sold if this was just simply a more name-friendly game than Luigi's Mansion. Luigi's Mansion sounds fucking boring. Like, I'm just shooting from the hip here, guys. This is just a boring sounding thing. And I know the game isn't boring. I've seen you play it, and you, I know you personally really like these games.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think this is not the way to hot start your console. And again, I will say 3 million sales, bad.
It's a top 5 selling GameCube game.
Yeah, that's sad. That's really sad that 3 million is a top 5 anything. The next one would sell 6 million, which doubles.
Yep.
Doubles. And sure then the does. One after that sells 12 million, doubles again. Yep. Guys.
Yep.
The
next one's 24
calling
million.
Calling it. Luigi's Mansion 4 is going to sell 24 million copies.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
On a long enough timeline.
This is
I'll be right.
This is certainly a...
Isn't like a chimps in a room that's going to eventually, with typewriters, are eventually going to get you Shakespeare. It's like, give enough time, we will hit the...
So no, I thought that was just, I just thought that was fascinating. Right now, the series is hot.
Yep.
The series is real hot.
Sure is.
You know, it's been around for like freaking 20 years, and it finally broke through. Finally had a breakthrough.
I do have to ask, the first two Luigi Mansions games.
Yep.
Quality of the actual games. Are they good games?
Not well. First one was not well received.
I never played any of them. Just that. Well, okay.
I think that the major reason that the first one was not well received is because it was a launch game and it was short. You can burn through it in a few hours.
Yeah. It was exclusively backhanded compliments. That's pretty much what they were saying. They were like, there's a lot of ingenuity, but it's not a Mario game. And yeah, it's super short.
So I think that first two games are quality games. Luigi's Mansion 1. It is certainly short, but it is a quality game. Luigi's Mansion 2, also a quality game. Like, both of these, like, Luigi's Mansion 1, probably top 20, 25 GameCube game. Luigi's Mansion 2 for 3DS, probably a top 10 3DS game. Hmm. Luigi's Mansion 3, I mean, there's so many games on Switch. I mean, maybe top 20, 25 again, just because of the breadth of software.
There's too many good stuff on this.
I looked it up. It was like in the mid-teens, and the stuff ahead of it is understandably like huge sellers. It's like a bunch of different Pokemon games. It's mainline Zelda games.
Yep.
And
Mario.
Mario Kart, the Mario games, all of those Mario, like Smash, stuff like that. All things where you're like, okay, I can understand these things being ahead of this, but... Yeah, no, like, Mansion 3 was, like, a big deal. Like, I was really surprised to see just how many copies it sold. That's really impressive. So, this series is, like, much like we were talking about Kirby. Kirby is currently on its best-selling game, best-reviewed game. So is Luigi's Mansion.
Yep, guys.
And this came out 2 years ago, right?
2019.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
So, Kirby is just off its best-selling game, and it sold, what, half of Luigi's Mansion 3?
Yeah.
Impressive. But yeah, both of these series, their trajectory is going up.
Yeah.
What do you think in terms of sales? Letter grade.
I'm giving it an A-.
Okay.
I think that these are, especially recently, really good sales over the course of its lifetime, being that it's had 20 years. It ain't that great, and it's using IP of the marquee franchise of the Nintendo. A-.
I had it down for an A as well.
Okay.
Maybe like intangibles or sort of, I have it down as like the prestige category. It's really important, like we just talked about. It's been a pretty important series for Nintendo for the past decade or so, since about 2013 when the 3DS version came out. They went as far as buying the studio Next Level Games that made Luigi's Mansion 2 and 3. It wasn't like a hostile takeover or something. The founder of that studio was going to sell and let Nintendo know, like, hey, we're retiring, so we're going to sell the studio. So that's when Nintendo came and was like, okay, well, we want to continue working with the studio, so we'll just go ahead and purchase this. And it was the last major acquisition, I think, that they've done.
I want to hear about hostile takeover where they actually run in and commandeer the store pirate style.
I like that. They should do that with Sega.
It was a hostile takeover. It just, this other building came out of nowhere and plagues started coming out the windows. And
you see like Sega executives in a stockade. It'd be perfect. Where do you have this this series? Do you have any notes on where you put it in the tier rankings?
Overall, I want to put it as a low A.
I do too.
Yeah, low A. Yep. Feels right, doesn't it?
I was way off.
No, you had it as a B. You're one tier down.
Yeah. What is a low A even put it beneath? What are our A's again?
Hang on, stand
pretty
by.
Pretty good shit, as I recall.
Kirby Splatoon.
Yeah.
So it's right up there with those two.
Yeah, I think that they've had one really, really good game. One game that is almost like a not a footnote. What do you say?
Like a tech demo.
Yeah. That really underachieved. And then one game which showed that there was still interest in it, and it's unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like... Luigi does his own thing. It's not like Mario. It's good. I see high hopes for this. I think it won't be a low A for much longer if they make a new sequel to this in a few years.
Yeah, the trajectory was kind of like, okay, well, here's like a tech demo, and then they waited a dozen years, and like, okay, well, here's another game, and like people showed interest, and they had a quality game. Like, okay, maybe this could be a thing, and then Luigi's Mansion 3 takes off.
Especially when the next one does $24 million.
It's true. It's gonna happen.
Did we mention Mario's missing?
You know, I thought about talking about that sort of like beginnings of the franchise, but. I'm not too familiar with Mario's Missing. I think it might be like a text adventure. So
I remember renting it as a kid, and I couldn't get past the first part. So that was because I got it because it had Mario in the name too. So you know, it was just because there was an NES game back in the day.
It's the one thing that Luigi's Mansion 3 is missing is you don't have the button to call for Mario. It was like the one of the buttons you had in the original and in Luigi's Mansion 2. You just like call out and you'd be really scared looking for Mario.
No,
I keep I'm hindering the sales of Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hopes because people keep on like, I'll take that one. Like, you do know it's a turn-taking combat game. They're like, oh, never mind.
It was like, you want Luigi's Mansion instead.
So, I mean, to your point, like, I bought it because it said Mario. I was like, people keep trying to buy it because it's Mario. I'm like, it's not what you think it is.
Yeah, don't overestimate.
It's good. Yeah. It's still good. Play it. But they're like, oh, it's not my style. I'm like, you suck.
Don't overestimate the intelligence of the average consumer.
Yeah, no.
You know?
So are you, like, concerned that they're going to try to return it?
No, I just don't want somebody to be out $60 on a game they're not going to like. Okay. I let people know because, I mean, I legitimately care about people.
What a nice guy.
I don't want people to buy something and be like, ah, shit. Like, it's...
Like, oh, that's so sweet of you. Do you have any PS5s?
Oh, motherfucker. The most annoying thing to me is... people walking up to me with their phones and just holding the phone out to me go, do you have this? I'm like, use words like an adult. Instead of just shoving a phone point blank in my face and go, do you have this? With three different items on it. Like, what are you fucking looking for?
I will guarantee you a new job if one day, like, someone puts their phone in the face, you just smack it out of their hand. Because that would be amazing.
Someone did that to me the other day with the Xboxes. He just shoved it in my face. And there was a Series X and a Series S on the page. And like a fucking something else. I forget what. He's like, I don't know which one you want. Like,
you should have like sneezed on it. Sneezed all over his phone.
He's like...
What would be great is if someone did that to you. Would be like, oh yes, we have plenty of cell phones. Let me show you. Right this way.
It's just so irritating. Oh.
Yeah, that's super rude.
Makes my skin crawl.
That's not cool.
That's the equivalent of like snapping at a waiter.
I know, right?
To get their attention. That's what a dirtbag move.
Why don't you tag him with one of yours?
I got two to talk about. A legendary Starfy.
Let's do it.
You want it? Okay,
I'm there. Random again.
Wes, take a guess.
I don't even know what it is.
Cool.
I'm gonna go. I'm just going F because I don't know what it fucking is.
Cool. Let's do it.
All right. So this is made by a company called Tose. Am I saying that right?
Tose. They're an interesting company. We won't go too far into it.
They're regarded as a quote unquote ghost developer. They are uncredited often, but they've been responsible in some capacity for over 1,000 games.
Yep.
Namely, things like MarioWare, Resident Evil, Dragon Ball. Again, they've made hundreds and hundreds of games for lots of different platforms and companies. So,
a lot of times what will happen is like a development studio or a publishing company will like design the game, and then Tose will come in and actually do the programming, actually crunch the numbers.
Yeah. So, Legendary Starfy, if you've never heard of it, it's a largely
YouTubing it right now.
underwater puzzle platforming game with boss battles. It's very colorful.
That sounds so gross.
Very chibi styled. So there's five total games you're talking about. Three on the Game Boy Advance, which came out consecutively from 2002 to 2004. They made one on the DS in 2006 and a reboot of sorts. They rebranded it like Fast and Furious, you know? Uh-huh. They just called it The Legendary Starfy. And this came out in 2008, which is, by the way, the only installment that's ever come out in the US.
Yep.
This is almost exclusively a Japanese game, and as best as I can tell, the Japanese don't even really give that much of a shit about it. Best-selling game ever broke was 300,000 units, and by the third installment, you're looking at five figures, so like 80,000, maybe 90,000 sold. As a franchise, maybe 1 million units sold. Hard to get numbers on this because a lot of these games are just so in the ether. I'm flying all this stupid stuff. Average reviews, 7 out of 10-ish. I read some of them, and you know what? The thing that they love to give these kind of comments where they're like, oh, you know, it's got this really nice art style. It's got clever game mechanics. No one ever uses the word fun. No one ever uses the word fun or engaging to describe one of these games. It's just a thing. And the reviews go downhill, too. So you're looking at a 7 out of 10 is nice. But then you get into some that have, like, 6 out of 10s. Really, really bad.
That's, like, the bottom of the scale for game reviews.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess my one big thing about this, because I did watch a bunch of gameplay of this, is that most people don't like the underwater levels. And they made an entire franchise around the idea that you're exclusively in underwater levels.
Yeah.
Because, like, underwater levels, people don't like it because you slow the character down and, like, you gotta move weirdly. It changes the way things operate. You just feel sluggish and slow. And they decided to make this legendary Starfy game, which is, like, all about it. So, I watched a lot of gameplay, and the other thing that I would say about it is, just from watching them, they all look so iterative. They all look the same. They don't really look very much different. Like, there's definitely an improvement in pixels from, like, the DS version to the Game Boy Advance version. But they all look fucking identical. And the games are insanely long. Like, these playthroughs, I watch all of them, 8 to 12 hours.
Oh, shit.
These games are fucking long.
That is a meaty experience on the GBA.
And it's, like, and again, it's the same repetitive, average-looking platform with really colorful, chibi art style to it. So, oof. Yeah, this is
it's probably a reason they haven't done one since 2008.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then again, you're looking at a game that existed for about, a franchise that existed for about 6 years and pumped out a bunch of games real fast. Because it seemed like the Japanese market cared enough to probably maybe turn a modest profit on sales of these, this game.
They made enough to make 5 of them, but then pulled the plug.
Yeah.
Looks like the full mechanic is just moving through the water and spinning. I mean, that's like the only mechanic you have. Yeah, this looks really dull, too.
So have you ever played any of these, John?
Nope.
Never played them?
Nope.
So this is just one that was on the list for the yuck of it?
It's a Nintendo franchise, so...
Let's get through it, then.
It exists.
Longevity. It existed for 6 years and had a really hot little moment there where they were just making a lot of them. I give it an F+.
Sure.
Sales, F+. You sold 1 million units. It's better than a couple of the other things we've talked about, but not by much. Reception is a D-, because, like, some people seem to care about it. And if not for the fact that it was called Legendary Starfy, I wouldn't know the name of the guy in it.
Right?
His name's Starfy.
Right. As far as, like, the iconography goes, like, I think he got, like, a manga in Japan and, like, had a few cameos in some games. But no one outside Japan would have any idea who this person was, who this character of Starfy was. And he's the title character of his own series. So, I don't know if his is even the correct pronoun for this character. Like that, I think we're leaning in one direction here, and we've given Fs to other game franchises before, like we talked about earlier. And usually, we don't want to give an F unless like the franchise is definitely dead and buried. It kind of is, isn't it? Like there's no like lasting influence of this going on. Right. They're not doing any franchise care for the Legendary Starfy.
So, as I understand, the Starfy itself is a thing in Smash. I think it's the thing, maybe you pick it up and then you just fly up and smash down on it. Is that right? Or is that
is that the star? No, that's just a star.
No, that's a warp star from Kirby.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, no, this is the one that just kind of like spins around and then slides over a little bit on the stage and it spins around some more.
Maybe?
Yeah. I know that it is an item in Smash. Mm. So there is that
one. So does it have representation there?
Yeah, a little inside joke for people deep in on Nintendo.
Deep cut.
Yeah. I'm giving this... I wrote it down as a high F, but I also realized I wrote that Pushmo was a mid F.
Mm.
I still think this should be below Pushmo, but above Chibi Robo.
Works for me.
It is absolutely F garbage.
Hey, I got one right.
You did it.
Yeah.
Wes, what do you think we're going to do with Metroid?
Oh, God. That's got to be an A.
First game was released in 1986.
Yeah.
Metroid as a series got
in... Yes. It hasn't come out with anything in a while, so...
We just got Metroid Dread last year.
Why am I insane? Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm insane.
Metroid Prime 4 is allegedly still coming.
Yeah. It's got to be an S.
But yeah, been around.
It's got to be an S.
Been around since 1986, so almost from the very beginning. I think the first game. I shouldn't get too deep into this. Cannot now forget the guy's name, but he was the designer or director of the first Metroid game, and he goes on to do a lot of work on Nintendo hardware up until about, I think, like just before the Wii U, or maybe just before the Switch ended up retiring. But the franchise got installments both on Game Boy and Super Nintendo. The Super Nintendo game is widely regarded as one of the best games ever made. The franchise went dark after Super Metroid in 1994 until about 2002. It skipped the N64 generation entirely. We could argue that was for the best. and then it goes through this renaissance from 2002 to 2010. You get games every year in this franchise except for 2003 and 2008. Some of the games were kind of spin-offs like Metroid Prime Hunters or Metroid Prime Pinball, so you're not getting like Metroid action games every year. And these games are basically action games, but they have a layer of complexity that's not too dissimilar from like a maze. So just like the high-level view, the key to progressing in the game is getting new skills or augments. You get a better gun, you get a new ability that will allow you to traverse two different areas in the region that you are in. I like that. And this game, this franchise becomes its own genre. And now it's like referred to as Metroidvania, but that kind of comes from Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which drew direct inspiration from Super Metroid. So calling it like Metroidvania is paying a lot of homage to Castlevania, which owes its success to Metroid. So, and hugely influential on independent games now.
Absolutely.
So let's do the breakdown. Iconography, a really...
That's all you're going to say, man? There's a lot more to go through.
Okay, what else you got?
I don't mean to write the notes on your thing, to over-note it.
It sounds like it.
but there's like 15 games total in this.
I do have like some breakdown of sales.
Okay. Yeah, there's just so many fucking games, and it's almost like it's this sort of flow chart of being super successful, having a good run of games, having just this dead area in its existence in which it's getting terrible reviews, literally coming out with a game that people were at the time saying this is going to kill the franchise.
I know the one.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little unfair, but okay.
They Which make one? A fucking pinball game.
Other M.
I liked Other M.
I think it's fine.
Yeah.
It definitely has its issues. I think they're trying to work around the Wii hardware a little too much, specifically in like the way you're moving the controller. I think that they leaned too heavily into a narrative that wasn't particularly good. But as like a Metroid game, the way you're progressing, I think it works really well. And I think that they did some fun things with the combat in the ways that like you're countering enemies. Anyway, Other M gets a thumbs up from me.
Yeah, I mean the series just has kind of a bit of an identity crisis. Mm. Again, the pinball game is kind of a joke. It does exist.
It's kind of like It's kind of like another Kirby.
And the pinball game. Oh my god! This game. I don't remember if it shipped with a Rumble Pack, but it was definitely compatible with a Rumble Pack for the original DS. So you had your DS cartridge, and then you had your GBA cartridge that you plug into the GBA slot. So it wouldn't work with a DSi, and you had it was like referred to as a chirp pack because it more like made sound effects than it actually caused your system to rumble.
Jeez.
But yeah, God, what a weird time for that franchise.
It moves away from a market, I guess, that maybe Nintendo thought they needed, but it moves away a lot from what you're talking about. Metroidvania, this genre that they create and are responsible for, into a lot of first-person shooting games, which is an interesting decision, and because Nintendo doesn't really have a first-person shooter of a game. I mean, now they've got Splatoon, which is a third-person shooter, and it has that kind of gameplay to it. But this is like literally like down the scope. You're doing this. You're Doom Guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like Master Chief or whatever. This is an interesting decision.
Now,
they would do this.
It was a really like controversial thing when they did that on the GameCube. We'll get into it when we talk about that on the retro show. But they went so far as to not even call it a first person shooter when they were marketing it. They called it a first person adventure. And I think like what they were trying to imply, And I think they were right, is like the primary gameplay isn't going to be like this run and gun shooting. It's still going to be the sort of adventure of it where you're going to like fight the boss, get the power up, and then find the next place that you're supposed to go. Like the exploration is like the primary draw. They even go so far as to like you can run and shoot at the same time, but you can't freely aim unless you just stop and use the shoulder buttons to then like point your gun around in different directions. Otherwise, you're just shooting directly in front of you.
I would love it if when you go into a morph ball, the camera just starts spinning.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, that's what the VR one's gonna be like.
Oh my god. Yeah, and I would just say, I mean, I don't know. Am I breaking down stuff that you wanted to break down later? I don't want to like.
No, it's okay. You can keep going.
Okay, the other thing that I think is important, again, just like Kirby, just like Luigi's Mansion now, the most recent installment is the best-selling in the franchise.
Yep.
And it was literally Game of the Year nominee. Mm-hmm. Like, this game scooped up so many, I mean, not awards, but nominations for awards. It was widely regarded as a fantastic game. Metroid Dread was, if I didn't say my name. Like,
I need to get back to that.
It's real good.
Yeah, so clearly, again, another franchise for Nintendo is cresting. Mm-hmm. Like, they're doing, like, Metroid's doing great. I think this is a really critical IP that they've made some interesting decisions. I'll use the word interesting again. I don't know if they're good decisions. They just did stuff with it. And lastly, I would say that Samus is on Mount Rushmore. She is a fantastic lead. She is like the first video game vixen, a true icon for gaming. Mm. So I think obviously now Lara Croft is probably the bigger woman in gaming, but there was always Samus, yep. You know, she was the first.
So in terms of iconography, like I agree, this is definitely a really well-loved character in enthusiast circles. I don't know how much like the normies are going to recognize Samus Aran or like the if you showed them a picture of like Samus in the Varia suit, like would they recognize that as a video game character and of what franchise? So as far as iconography, I go with a B, above average, but definitely not at the same level of Kirby, Luigi, Donkey Kong, especially. So, longevity, S tier, been around since 1986.
Oh, yeah, you got to put this thing.
It's been around as long as Mario and Zelda and all of them.
It's had some low points in that run, but the fact that it's been around so long, 15 games,
mm-hmm.
15 games, that's a lot of video games.
As far as sales, you get 20.2 million as a series.
Which is half of what Kirby sold, and Kirby sold half of what Donkey Kong sold.
Right, so quadruple the installments as the Luigi's Mansion series, but fewer sales.
Yeah, pretty much identical sales, yeah. About 20 million
apiece. Yeah, slightly fewer. Consistently, like, pushes a million at least in most of the games. So, you know, they do about Fire Emblem Xenoblade numbers. So I think you go into the B tier for that. But just like sort of the breakdown, the original Metroid was the best-selling one until we got to Metroid Dread, like fucking 30 years later. At 2.7 million, Return of Samus on the Game Boy, 1.72 million. Super Metroid, one of the best games ever made, 1.4 million. And then you get Metroid Fusion on GBA, 1.6 million. And then you start to get into like the franchise-changing stuff. Metroid Prime was the best-selling one until Dread at 2.84 million. Which is, to me, like, huge thumbs up. I think they were hugely successful with the Prime games and transitioning that game, that series, into a 3D polygonal game as opposed to, like, a 2D. But this it's a super interesting franchise because, like Mario, like Zelda, it really successfully finds this dichotomy of being able to exist as a 3D game and a 2D game. And both of the sides of the coin will get installments over the years. It's not like it just became like this is only a first-person game or this is only a side-scrolling game. They managed to do both. Zero Mission doesn't break a million. That was a remake of the first one. Metroid Prime 2 Echoes sells a million. Metroid Prime Hunters, which is a weird decision. This was one of the weird points of the series when they put it on the DS but made it more of like a competitive shooter. Sells a million units. Metroid Prime 3 Corruption, 1.4. Other M, the one you were talking about, not super well received. Doesn't break a million, 800,000. Samus Returns on the 3DS just barely goes over 500,000, which is a shame because I really liked that remake of Metroid 2 on the 3DS. I thought it was really, really good. But just didn't move a whole lot of units. That one came out like after the Switch had launched. So at that point, people really just wanted 3DS software on Switch. And then, like we said, Metroid Dread almost probably has done 3 million by now.
Yeah.
Most recent numbers were at 2.9. So it's doing great. So it's been kind of a steady train for a while and is hopefully back on the upswing.
Yeah, and as far as I understand, there is a new Metroid game in the works, but it's still TBA. And right. They have no official time at which it's going to come out.
So yeah, this Metroid Prime 4 was announced as a logo in 2017, launch year of Switch at that E3.
So we gotta pencil this game in for being the best selling one, regardless of what it even is. If they call it Pinball 2, it's gonna sell 5 million copies.
Just
the sheer hype around it,
and the install base. Like now that there's a Switch with like 115 million systems out there, you got a lot of people to work with. It had to like wholesale restart development back in 2019. In early 2019, they did this video. They're like, "Hey, sorry, we gotta scrap whatever we had." And Retro Studios, who did the previous Prime game, is gonna take back over. So they essentially had to restart, and we're almost 4 years removed for that. So I gotta see this game sometime soon.
Yeah.
But like you were saying, in terms of sales. I think I mentioned like a B because it kind of consistently does those 2 million-ish units. And as far as prestige, like especially in the early 2000s, that window we were talking about from 2002 to 2010, it was one of the big three for Nintendo. It was Mario, Zelda, Metroid were the big franchises. Had a long stretch with a lot of franchise care. We get a game every once in a while now, and it's usually a big deal to the enthusiast audience. Like, I don't think you could undersell the influence that Metroid as a series has had on action platformers, especially in independent games. Like, so many independent games model this formula. Games like Hollow Knight, huge, huge inspiration from Metroid. Very influential.
I also think it's important to remember that a unit sold in 1986 is far more important than a unit sold today. You know, again,
this smaller market, sure.
Smaller market, and that money early on is the seed investment for what would become, you know, the next console. Now it's so established and entrenched that there's going to be more Nintendo consoles. There's never a doubt that this is going anywhere. That first Metroid game and the Game Boy Metroid game back in the 80s are crucial for just, you know, cementing Nintendo as a franchise, as a company.
So, personally, I think we go high A.
I agree. I think this is one of those scenarios where typically I harp on sales, and I know that it doesn't have the sales of Kirby. I think it's right on par with Kirby. I give it a high A. And, like, other competent, like, I would put it above Splatoon simply because Splatoon sold more as a franchise, but it's also only been around for, like, 7 years.
It's still pretty new. I wouldn't have an issue with that.
So yeah, I think this is totally on par with Kirby in spite of having half the sales. It's got all of this really fascinating stuff surrounding it. Again, including Samus herself. I think that's probably the one big dispute we have here. I think Samus is a way more important character. But, you know, that's just me.
But yeah, I think we agree on where it goes. Last one.
One more. And this is kind of a tricky one to place, but Mother / Earthbound, whatever you want to call it.
Before you start, the IGN, noted video game website, they have a podcast called Nintendo Voice Chat, and they did like an impromptu tier ranking. I think I might have mentioned this before, for Nintendo franchises, and their placement for the Mother Earthbound series is what prompted me to be like, no, we need to do this, and we need to set the record straight. We need to do this right, because they were way, way, way off on where I think this franchise goes. Take it away.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, Wes, do you have a guess?
Earthbound. C.
Let's get into it.
Okay.
Sorry, my 5 a.m. shift is
really kicking in?
It's kicking in right now. I'm having a rough time.
All right, well, we'll get through this one. Oof. Right, so it's made by HAL, the people behind Kirby. It's also made by, there's also made in conjunction with a game called Ape.
Yep.
/ Creature. Co-devs on tons of really big projects, especially Pokemon. They've got like 15 Pokemon games that they've contributed to in some capacity. They're typically co-developers, though, again, so they're not necessarily I take that language to mean that there's like architects, and then there's like foremen, and then there's like construction workers.
All they did was grab lunch. That was it.
I think these
just ran out for the lunch.
These are the construction workers. So the, these aren't the architects.
The sort of like development of these games is a bit of a tangled web. The general view of it is it's the director of these games in this series, a sort of creative helm. I think the guy's name is Itoi. Shigesato, I think is his surname, Shigesato Itoi. He was very close friends with the late president of Nintendo, Satoru Iwata, and that's where like HAL Laboratories came in, especially with Earthbound for the Super Nintendo, Mother 2. It was a game that was really in the weeds in development, and then he went to Iwata, who was at HAL Laboratories at the time, and he came in and was like, well, we could either try to fix what you have and we'll be done with the game in a couple years, or we can start completely over from scratch and we'll be done in about 6 months. So that's what they ended up doing. That's how we got Mother 2, which is how HAL Laboratories became involved in the series.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Why are they called Mother? Is there...
I don't know.
Oh.
I'm sure there's a deep explanation within the lore that if we were fans of this series, we would spend the next 45 minutes telling you about. Mm.
And I do like these games. I think they're pretty good. But anyway, we've interrupted.
That's fine. No, essentially it's three games. Again, yep. We're talking about like Luigi's Mansion. This is a franchise with three games. The first one being Mother, which came out in 89, and it was only on the Famicom, so only available in Japan.
Yep.
The second one, which we call Earthbound, they call Mother 2, was an SNES release. And then in 2006, you get a Game Boy Advance, mm-hmm. Mother 3.
Oh.
So what is the...
C's too high.
Yeah, so what is the franchise here? It's a satirical take on JRPGs of the time. It sort of sticks its nose up at the conventions of high fantasy and swords and shields and character specking and stuff like that. And instead, it tries to substitute it with 50s Americana and childhood imagination, where rather than it being about, again, swords and bows and arrows and dragons breathing fire, it's the mundane objects around us in everyday life. It's a yo-yo or a baseball bat.
Yeah, and then it just sort of like lends a whimsy to it.
Yeah.
Like yeah, we're going to go beat up these creatures, and the creatures are like a pack of ants.
Yeah. So I think it's funny that in 1989, they're already making a satirical game about how fucking generic JRPGs are, considering, like what was the one big series at the time?
I mean, Dragon Quest.
Yeah, so they're essentially just taking shots at Dragon Quest. I think it's so wild because all of the JRPGs nowadays still feel so very derivative in a lot of ways. They all feel like they're
still... Dragon Quest is still around. It's still being Dragon Quest.
So it's just kind of...
They just came out with a new one, too.
Mm-hmm. And you also, it's interesting because this is a Japanese game, and it's sort of telling the story of kids in America in the 50s. So it's sort of this secondhand cultural information that's coming through. And I think that leads to a lot of interesting, like, I don't know, humor in the dialogue, and a lot of the translations are it's very, very important to have translations done correctly if you're going to have a game like this viewed from an American audience who is the characters. I don't know. This is a very weird reference, but I guess it's the only thing that's coming off the top of my head. I recently watched that Disney live-action Three Musketeers movie.
Okay.
And I was like, how far removed from French culture is this shit?
Right.
Nobody's even doing accents. Like, you know? It's like...
Yeah, there was... It's like three times removed fan fiction of like the Alexandre Dumas novel, which is like this dense, impenetrable. I tried to read it a couple of times. It's... Oof. Anyway, neither here.
You try to read a book?
Yeah, I usually get a few pages in and get bored.
You're aware there's no pictures in it, right?
That's when I stopped.
So the first game, actually, it sold very, very well in Japanese markets. Of course, it didn't get a US release, so yeah. The sequel...
Yeah, as a matter of perspective.
What do you mean?
Sure. Like, sometimes for certain games and certain genres, some could sell like maybe a couple hundred thousand, and it'd be considered a success in the Japanese market.
I think it was the fourth best-selling game of the year it came out. That's as basically close to metrics. The sequel, the SNES one, does have pretty solid metrics. It sold about 700,000 copies in Japan and about 150 here in the U.S., which is bad because there was a big marketing push to sell it in America. I guess because they were probably thinking, like, if the Japanese like American culture, Americans love American culture. Maybe this will sell really well here.
On the Super Nintendo especially, there was a big push, like sort of in conjunction, like Squaresoft and Nintendo together were trying to make RPGs a thing here, specifically like Japanese RPGs. And you see with like the big push for Final Fantasy, Super Mario RPG, Chrono Trigger, Earthbound. Like all these games get these big marketing pushes and they never really achieved the sort of mainstream success that they wanted here until Final Fantasy VII on a different console.
That's kind of a shame. And then they make the third one, which again is only released in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems to be the biggest thorn in people's sides, is that they never gave this one even a shot here in America, because a lot of people consider this to have been a great installment. And to the point where even the community around this game fan dubbed it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to play, you can go play versions on ROMs of the game as translated. And I guess that's when we should probably start talking about why are we even talking about this game like the way that we are, this with coached language about is this thing good? And it is because it has one of the most rabid, small, not even large, but just small but rabid fan bases.
They are quite loud.
They love this game. And again, these guys that you're talking about on this IGN podcast that clearly don't know what the fuck they're talking about, they gave it an S ranking or some shit?
Oh, I think they put it in the A tier.
Yeah. So a game that like that obviously has not sold all that well, didn't even connect with the American markets, even though it's about America to an extent.
And the way they were talking about this, they were like, oh, people would be so excited. People would be so pumped if a new Earthbound got announced. Everyone would be like, well, about 100,000 people, like, or maybe a few, 10,000 people would be super pumped. Like the people you follow on Twitter would be amazed. Like, people who walk into like a store, like just your average normie person who buys a game every once in a while, like, they're not going to give a fuck. Anyway, sorry, I've cut you off.
This other podcast, how are they rating them? Like, are they just? It sounds like they're rating them based on like what they personally like,
right?
Not based off numbers.
They were like, "What are our favorites?"
We're trying our best to be objective, but I know that we're definitely subjective about where we put things.
No. This is science. We're doing science.
I think that there is something to be said for that. This deep lore obsession, because it makes me think of two things. One, it makes me think of some certain names that have played the game and love it. A lot of famous writers have played the game and praised it. Trey Parker played this game a ton and said it was partly an inspiration for South Park. There are tons and tons of name-checkable people who played this game when they were kids and loved the hell out of it. So I think that's interesting. And I think that also games nowadays, there's this fascination with lore that didn't really exist back then, but does now in retrospect. Think about a series like Undertale or FNAF, the Five Nights at Freddy's. The most primitive, simple, stupid game has one of the deepest plots of a game that's like ever of a gaming franchise.
They got so many freaking books now. It's stupid.
Right? Yeah. I mean, and again, it's kind of like we were talking about, Hollow Knight. Like Hollow Knight is a game that exists now and is loved. But it wouldn't. It walks and runs because Metroid crawled. Same deal here. There's this obsession with the language and the in jokes and the little bits of this game that I think people that get deep into the lore of a game really do latch onto, and that's why this game is thought of so well. Is because it's written so well. Earthbound, the SNES Earthbound, especially. Mm-hmm. Constantly gets brought up as one of the best soundtracks for a video game, one of the best scores ever composed. And, you know, it's also very much this look, don't touch. Like, it's Japan only. Americans don't get it. So then we thrive for it. We want this even more. It's like this thing that we can't have, so we think we want it. So it's all of this weird stuff. I mean,
that's how we got Xenoblade.
Yeah.
It's true.
So again, it's just hard to place. I feel like it's really hard to even grade this thing. It just sort of... It exists. I'll go through the things. Longevity, I give it a C, but I guess I could give it a D, really. We're talking about a game that existed for like 17 years, three installments. Existed in 89, so that's way back when. But they haven't even really, aside from like remakes and putting it on like
Switch and stuff. ROM dumps. They don't really remake the game. I think they'll up-res it. But yeah they'll, and that's the thing, like, to me that's the biggest point of its longevity. Like, you do have the games that came out in 89 and 94 that they've re-released now on Wii U and Switch. And I think Earthbound they released on the 3DS Virtual Console. So like, there is some franchise care happening here. They take it upon themselves to make the effort to keep these two games. Like, and the original Mother, didn't ever release in North America until they released it on the Wii U Virtual Console. They call it Earthbound Beginnings. So, you know, it's not like this was like a one-and-done release. There is, again, and I assume like on the next Nintendo console, whatever it turns out to be, we'll probably see some...
Switch.
Yes, there's the Super Switch. We'll probably see Earthbound and Earthbound Beginnings in some form on a virtual console or a Super Switch online streaming service. They'll do something.
Yeah. Sales, you got to give it a D, I guess. I mean, it sold a bunch of units very early on, so that's good. But ultimately, you're talking about a franchise that maybe sold like a couple million units? Is that...
Yeah, as a total franchise, sure.
Yeah, and again, it's one that never even really got a shot over here.
My favorite thing about... My newest favorite thing about this series is the Wikipedia page, because it's just such fan fiction for reality. Like,
you were saying fucking Three Musketeers is impenetrable. I started trying to read that thing and got just immediately lost in jargon.
Mm.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and just like the way that you can write things on Wikipedia that will frame things in the most positive light possible. Like, the way this thing is just written about on Wikipedia and of course on fan sites and stuff is just always like, oh, this cultural touchstone, this national treasure of Japan. Like, well, it's a game that maybe sold a million copies over its lifetime in the world as a franchise. Like, this wasn't something that everyone was doing.
It is definitely drilling down to a very niche thing. Mm. Probably, like, I mean, again, I don't know why this comes to mind. What Hot American Summer? Like, What Hot American Summer? We love that movie. But it's
that was a good movie.
You know? Like, there's...
Yeah, but what was the... I think the box office was like 20,000 or something like that. It was bad.
That's rough. But yeah, like, this series, it obviously has its devotees. There's something to it, even if it is just these people that are obsessed with lore. If they announced that Mother 4 was going to come out, I think, yeah, this is one that just, again, on sheer hype alone, you could pencil in a couple million units sold on that thing just from people being like, well, what the fuck is it going to be? It's been 16 years? 16 years.
Yeah.
Since they've last revisited this.
Or even if they announced a localization port of Mother 3, I think people, like, fans of the series would be very excited. And there are people who are probably curious about the series that would be excited for that as well. My favorite Earthbound meme is like, oh, I'm really a big fan of Earthbound. I hope we get to play it someday. Because there people just enjoy the aesthetic. Like, I don't think, like, much like Metroid, like, there is a lot of independent games that draw a lot of inspiration from this. Like you were saying about, like, people who played it when they were younger and then go on to do things like Trey Parker doing South Park or go on to make their own games. There's a game that I talked about earlier this year, Omori, that draws a lot of inspiration just in terms of, like, the setting and the way that your characters, like, the just, like, the items that they're using, the general aesthetic draws a lot from Earthbound.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe the worst you can say about it is ahead of its time. You know, there's maybe an era for it, but yeah, I don't know. It did what it did. Do you want to go overall ranking here? Where do you want to put this at, first of all?
I have it as a D.
Yeah. It is a D. I actually have a high C.
Okay.
So I'm putting it a little higher than you are, and I'd be cool with dropping down on that if you maybe wanted to go C-ish. What do we got in our Cs right now?
Anyways? Let me take a look at the C.
Pikmin. Team. Yeah, this shit's more important than Pikmin.
Pikmin is an active franchise. there is a new there's a new Pikmin game announced for next year.
It's arresting. Stop saying
that. The worst selling Pikmin game sold more than Earthbound.
It's to be traveled.
That's a good point. You know, that is a good point. I think it's a C-. It's like actually, Advance Wars. You maybe put Advance. I don't know. But here's the thing. Nobody gives a fuck about Advance Wars, really.
We do.
We care, but we're three guys. You know, there is, like, these people that are just obsessed with Earthbound. It is so strange that they have this cult of zealots that are just super into it. It's bizarre. Again, like a lot of these other franchises, it's like, again, it's Pikmin's kind of an afterthought. It's sort of a joke. Like, we were making fun of it as being the game people bought because they thought they were getting Pokemon. this game is means a lot to a handful of people, and you can't discredit that, but also at the same time, it didn't really sell for shit.
Should it be in the same tier as Brain Age?
Oh, Brain Age is way better than this one. And I actually still in my own notes keep Brain Age at a B, because it's just that good.
Now, once we get everything sort of sussed out where things go, we can revisit and decide, like, and we will end up with, like, oh shit, we got way too many things in the B tier. Something's got to get moved around, or we don't have anything in the D tier. So I guess, like, what we need to figure out over the course of time is, what's the difference between a C tier and a D tier game? Because yeah, we kind of know the difference between, like, what's the difference between an F tier and a D tier. Like, an F tier, there's...
We've got a lot of stuff in the C and a lot of stuff in the F. You're right, there are no D games, and I don't know.
I mean, I'm totally fine putting Earthbound into the C tier for now, yeah, and just kind of seeing how things shake out, because maybe we do end up... I'm just going to pull a random example from the list here. Like, maybe, like, we do decide that Earthbound should be in a tier above Fatal Frame or a Wave Race. Yeah. So maybe that's where the D tier shakes out. So, you know, I'm totally comfortable putting it as a C for now.
Okie doke.
And we'll see where things go.
Then let's do that.
Cool. Well, I think we're getting toward the end here. We got anything else we need to bring up before we close it out?
Nah, I think that covers it.
Cool. Next up is going to be the retro show. It's going to be a good one. We're gonna talk about some old... Fellas, I watched... I've been watching a few of the movies, and we'll have some games to talk about. There's some really good games to talk about.
Nice.
In December of 2001. I watched the extended version of Fellowship of the Ring. It is 3 hours and 45 minutes long. Oh, my goodness.
I watched this maybe like three times in the past 2 months.
I mean, what do you gain out of the extended version?
A lot. There's like, and of course, like, not all of it's important. Like, I think, like, the movie that they released in theaters was probably the best version.
Yeah, watch them place their lunch order. And,
but it's not like, they don't have any, like, long extended scenes. What you get with in this extended version is, like, these little vignettes of just kind of, like, giving you a better idea of, like, the scope of the journey that they're on. Because I think sometimes just, like, the amount of ground that they're covering is lost a little bit. But, yeah. I mean, even at 3 hours and 45 minutes, like, a lot of the scenes are so brisk, they're so snappy, they just move through them.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's for the next show. We're going to talk about a million movies that came out in December of 2001. Yeah. But that's it. That's the end. Till next time.
So long.
Sayonara. Thank you.